taken the fact. It is my intention to go to Blithedale tomorrow. Can I be of service to you before my departure? If you pleased, Mr. Coverdale, said he, you might do me a very great favor. A very great one, repeated I, in a tone that must have expressed but little alacrity of beneficence, although I was ready to do the old man any amount of kindness involving no special trouble to myself. A very great favor, do you say? My time is brief, Mr. Moody, and I have a good many preparations to make. But be good enough to tell me what you wish. Ah, sir, replied old Moody, I don't quite like to do that. And on further thoughts, Mr. Coverdale, perhaps I'd better apply to some older gentleman or to some lady, if you would have the kindness to make me known to one, who may happen to be going to Blithedale. You're a young man, sir. Does that fact lessen my availability for your purpose? Asked I. However, if an older man will suit you better, there is Mr. Hollingsworth, who has 3 or 4 years the advantage of me in age, and is a much more solid character, and a philanthropist to boot. I'm only a poet, and so the critics tell me no great affair at that. But what can this business be, Mr. Moody? It begins to interest me, especially since your hint that a lady's influence might be found desirable. Come, I'm really anxious to be of service to you. But the old fellow, in his civil and demure manner, was both freakish and obstinate, and he'd now taken some notion or other into his head that made him hesitate in his former design. I wonder, sir, said he, whether you know a lady whom they call Zenobia? Not personally, I answered, although I expect that pleasure tomorrow, as she's got the start of the rest of us and is already a resident at Blithedale. But have you a literary turn, Mr. Moody? Or have you taken up the advocacy of women's rights? Or what else can have interested you in this lady? Zenobia, by the by, as I suppose you know, is merely her public name, a sort of mask in which she comes before the world, retaining all the privileges of privacy. A contrivance, in short, like the white drapery of the Veiled Lady, only a little more transparent. But it is late. Will you tell me what I can do for you? Please to excuse me tonight, Mr. Coverdale, said Moody. You're very kind, but I'm afraid I've troubled you, when after all there may be no need. Perhaps with your good leave I will come to your lodgings tomorrow morning, before you set out for Blithedale. I wish you good night, sir, and beg pardon for stopping you. And so he slipped away, and as he did not show himself the next morning, it was only through subsequent events that I ever arrived at a plausible conjecture as to what his business could have been. Arriving at my room, I threw a lump of candle coal upon the grate, lighted a cigar, and spent an hour in musings of every hue from the brightest to the most somber, being in truth not so very confident as to some former periods that this final step, which would mix me up irrevocably with a Blithedale affair, was the wisest that could possibly be taken. It was nothing short of midnight when I went to bed, after drinking a glass of particularly fine sherry on which I used to pride myself in those days. It was the very last bottle, and I finished it with a friend the next forenoon before setting out for Blithedale. Chapter 2. Blithedale. There can hardly remain for me, who am really getting to be a frosty bachelor, with another white hair every week or so in my moustache, there can hardly flicker up again so cheery a blaze upon the hearth as that which I remember the next day at Blithedale. It was a wood fire in the parlour of an old farmhouse on an April afternoon, but with the fitful gusts of a wintry snowstorm roaring in the chimney. Vividly does that fireside recreate itself, as I rake away the ashes from the embers in my memory, and blow them up with a sigh for lack of more inspiring breath. Vividly for an instant, but anon with a dimmest gleam, and with just as little fervency for my heart as for my finger ends. The staunch oaken logs were long ago burnt out. Their genial glow must be represented, if at all, by the merest phosphoric glimmer, like that which exudes rather than shines from damp fragments of decayed trees, deluding the benighted wanderer through a forest. Around such chill mockery of a fire, some few of us might sit on the withered leaves, spreading out each a palm towards the imaginary warmth, and talk over our exploded scheme for beginning the life of paradise anew. Paradise, indeed! Nobody else in the world, I'm bold to affirm, nobody at least, in our bleak little world of New England, had dreamed of paradise that day, except as the poll suggests the topic. Nor, with such materials as were at hand, could the most skilful